morning. It's time for the Ship Report, the show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. It's Tuesday, December 12th, 2017. We have about 8 vessels on today's Columbia River ship schedule. In our marine weather forecast, we have southeast winds, 10 to 15 knots, easing to 5 to 10 in the afternoon. Wind waves from the southeast, 2 feet at 4 seconds apart, and west swells, 4 feet at 14 seconds. They're going to build later on in the day to about 7 feet high at about 12 seconds apart. So they're going to get higher and a little bit closer together. And we do have those wind waves generally from the east, east-ish, coming up against westerly swells. So you could see some confused seas out there. And today we're going to talk about earth tides. Yep, earth tides. As the water is moving with the pull of the moon and the sun, so is the earth. It's actually quite elastic. So we'll talk about that in just a minute. But first, let's take a look at our Columbia River ship schedule for the day. We have 3 inbounders, we have 3 in the Astoria anchorage, and we have 2 outbounders heading downriver and out to sea. So a relatively light ship schedule. The schedule varies from day to day. When I say schedule, it's not like a bus schedule or a train schedule. It's a schedule set by the vessels and the people who are operating them and the companies who own them. And so it's we're just sort of observing a phenomenon of the ships coming and going, and I'm giving you estimates of when I think you might see them if you look out the window in certain parts of the river. First arrival on the river today coming in across the Columbia River bar is the Grand Venus, arriving from Vancouver, British Columbia. She's headed for Vancouver, Washington. She's a car carrier with brand new Subarus on board. She'll pass Astoria around 1:30 p.m. You might see her in the Portland, Vancouver area by about 7:30 this evening. And car carriers in general are very high-sided vessels. They look very unusual compared to the regular sort of ship that you see anchored offshore in different places along the river. That's because they are essentially big floating parking garages that are very well designed for their purpose, but they still do look unusual and different to those of us who are used to seeing the sleeker, lower lines of a bulk carrier or other kind of ship that we see on the river. Next inbound is the Star Pathfinder, arriving from South Korea, headed for Astoria's anchorage. She'll be picking up wheat upriver eventually, but she'll arrive in Astoria's anchorage and drop her anchor there at about 2:30 p.m. And the anchorage area, by the way, is upriver of the Astoria Megler Bridge on the north side of the shipping channel. There's a naturally deep area there where ships can safely anchor. And that means, by safely, it means that they're out of the ship channel where ships are going. And they're also, there's enough room there for them to swing at anchor safely and not run aground. Because as the direction of the water changes in the river with the rising and falling tide, those ships are swinging around on their anchor chains and they need room to move. So that anchorage is a great spot for them to be able to do that safely. Next inbound is the India, arriving from South Korea, headed for the Rice Island Anchorage. She'll be picking up wheat eventually, but she'll arrive at the Rice Island Anchorage just opposite Tongue Point, a little bit east of Astoria, maybe around 10 a.m. And she'll drop her anchor there and wait until she heads upriver. So when ships stop in the anchorage, they could be stopping because their berth upriver is not ready yet. They may need to undergo some kind of inspection. And so it's a good place for them to stop and take a break, drop their anchor, and go through those sorts of things. And sometimes ships are just waiting for a berth, and they have a chance to get in out of the really tumultuous weather that we see out in the Pacific at this time of year. So it's probably a great relief for sailors to come in and be able to wait for a bit in an anchorage offshore here. In the Astoria Anchorage, we have the CF Crystal headed for Kalama, pick up corn, soy, or wheat. She'll be leaving around noontime, passing Astoria outbound. She's headed for Kalama. That's right. What am I saying? So let me try that again. The CF Crystal, she's headed for Kalama today. Corn, soy, or wheat are her possible cargoes when she gets there. She'll be leaving around noontime, and about 5 hours later, she'll arrive in Kalama. In the anchorage, we have the Amos Ace and the Lucky Star. Those ships are awaiting orders for reasons I just mentioned before, are all possible reasons why they're out there. Outbounders, we have the Afroessa leaving Longview with wheat on board, leaving around 5 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 8:30 p.m. And the Urgina Luck is leaving Kalama, corn, soy, or wheat on board, leaving around 6 p.m., passing Astoria outbound around 11 p.m. Well, today we're going to talk about a fun topic. I've been talking about tides for the past few days. I started out answering a listener question, and I kind of went a little afield there, doing a lot of research and finding, well, this is neat. I can talk about this, and what about that? So now we are on the topic of land tides or earth tides, and this is something that I learned about boy, I don't know how many years ago now, when a vessel came to Astoria, the Marcus G. Langseth, owned by the, well, operated by the Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory at Columbia University, a research ship. And somebody called me and said, there's a research vessel down there. You ought to go talk to those people for the ship report. And I did. And I became friends with the science officer on board, who was a geologist. And he explained a lot of things to me. We did numerous interviews. That ship was here for months because it was waiting for, I'm not exactly sure why, parts or something. But at any rate, it spent quite a bit of time here, and I got the opportunity to interview people on board that ship several times, and it was very interesting. So one day I was talking with the people on board, and they said, well, have you ever heard of earth tides? And at first I kind of thought maybe they were teasing me because they knew that I wasn't a geologist, but as it turned out, they were not teasing me. Land tides, earth tides, are a real thing. So when, as I mentioned, when the earth is rotating through the gravitational pull of the moon and sometimes the moon and the sun at the same time, the water is literally pulled up from the surface of the earth. It's very, of course, water moves easily. We don't have a lot of trouble visualizing that. But at the same time that that is happening, the crust of the earth, the surface of the earth, is being pulled up as well. Not nearly as much as the water, so we're not seeing 12-foot earth tides. But what they told me was that here, probably in Astoria, you could measure from a few inches to a foot of movement in the earth's surface whenever there is a tidal change is happening. So between high and low tide here, you might see a foot change. Now, we don't notice it as an earthquake, but the earth, so their contention as geologists was that the earth is quite elastic and just moves. So these movements are so small that most people are not even aware that they exist. I certainly was not aware that they exist. And so I asked, well, how do you measure that kind of thing? And they said, well, we have something called a gravitometer, which is something that measures the gravitational pull of the earth, the gravitational forces acting on the earth. And they had one of these sitting out on the dock, and they were using it to assess the tiny movements, the tiny differences in those forces. And so these are happening every single time there is a tide. There's some kind of those forces are acting on the earth. Now, what's the value of knowing this? Well, one of the values of this is that scientists are investigating the geological effect of this pull on the earth with relative to things like earthquakes and volcanic eruptions. And they haven't actually found a direct relationship, so between, say, a very high tide and an earthquake or anything else. But they're measuring this because it's all more data to use as they go about creating models and things that they can use for any kind of prediction. So, and it's also just a very interesting thing to think about earth tides. So the next time you're standing outside on the ground, think about the fact that it's probably moving a little bit under you, even though it's not going to be in the form of an earthquake or anything catastrophic, that the earth is a living, kind of a living thing, sort of breathing with the tide, so to speak. So just another interesting facet of life here on planet Earth. You've been listening to The Ship Report, a show about all things maritime. I'm Joanne Rideout. Thanks for listening, and have a great day.